This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Claire Babineau-Fontenot, CEO of Feeding America. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the American Sugar Alliance. America's sweetest industry creates jobs and provides a sustainably produced food ingredient. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Feeding America's Claire Babineau-Fontenot next. America's 11,000 sugar beet and sugarcane farmers count on a strong U.S. sugar policy to keep American consumers supplied with an essential ingredient. Better yet, it's designed to cost taxpayers nothing. These farmers support more than 151,000 jobs throughout the sugar supply chain in both urban and rural communities. They contribute over $23 billion to the economy each year and help keep it sweet in America. Learn how the Farm Bill supports sugar crop farmers and workers at sugaralliance.org. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Food insecurity in the nation continues to climb. Today, USDA data suggests hunger impacts more people than during the COVID pandemic. Claire Babineau-Fontenot, CEO of Feeding America, says food and financial donations are down at a time when inflation is impacting not only food banks, but the people they serve.
Contrary to what people would think, the numbers have gotten worse. You see, during the pandemic, we were all hands on deck, working together in beautiful, powerful ways, and food insecurity rates went down. And since the pandemic, they're going back up again. It's pretty sad.
Are these historic levels?
Yeah, they are. There's only one time in our history when food insecurity rates, since they started measuring them, when they were higher than they are now, and that was during the economic downturn of 2008-2009. So right now in this country, the estimates are that about 47 million people are food insecure. Of that, nearly 14 million are kids. I mean, that's one in five kids in this country, where their families can't make ends meet so that those kids get the nutrition they need in order to be set up for success.
How much is the economy involved now in these food insecurity numbers?
Yeah, you've got to believe that it is, right? That the economy, the macro economy, of course, has an impact on these kinds of numbers. Now, during the pandemic, there were some good, meaningful investments made in the charitable food system infrastructure. So we are better prepared to get food from where it is to where it's needed the most than we ever have been in our history. We have less food to distribute now, though, which is striking.
What's the level of charitable donations, and how is inflation impacting those dollars that you receive?
All across the country, across all kinds of nonprofits, including Feeding America, we're seeing significant declines in donations. During the pandemic, we saw historic highs. We're not at historic lows, I'm grateful to say, but each year you're seeing significant reductions year over year over year since the peak during the pandemic. That's impacting Feeding America, and it's impacting other organizations that are out there trying to do good. We're seeing increases in demand, so food insecurity rates are going up, and we're seeing decreases in the amount of food being donated, the amount of food that we're receiving from USDA, and we're seeing decreases in funding. So the way that we try to close gaps is like when you don't have as much in one space, then you try to double down in another. But when you're seeing decreases in all three, you can't cover the gap. So a lot of food banks out there are having to turn people away. It's the saddest thing I ever see when I'm out in the country with food banks, is when they run out of food before they run out of people.
How much of the food that you distribute through the 200 plus food banks in the country, how much of that is donated, and how much do you still have to purchase?
It depends upon the actual, so we're a spectrum, right? We have over 200 food banks when you include affiliate food banks, and all of these economies are different, right? But a significant portion of the food, no matter which food bank you're talking about, you know, more than 30% of that food as a general rule is going to be donated. And then a significant part of the food will come from federal commodities. About 80%+ of all of the federal commodities that are distributed in the United States are distributed through the Feeding America network. But when those two things are down, then you have to access money and go out and buy food to supplement. And depending upon the community you're in, that impacts how well able you are to do that. So the kinds of things that you know that people experiencing hunger confront around having to make all of these impossible choices, some food banks and pantries have to make similar choices for their organizations. They sometimes can't afford to buy the food and keep the lights on. I have to tell you, there's some really serious challenges that we have to hold hands on and go find a way for.
In Washington, budget reconciliation is front and center. If SNAP dollars are reduced, how will that affect the food banks and those groups that are attempting to help those that are food insecure?
When I hear things about, you know, we need to decrease SNAP right now, I wonder if they've seen what the rest of us have seen. Because I don't assume that they're bad people. I assume that they just must not know the things that we know. This is a terrible time to decrease SNAP benefits. And what they're talking about in terms of decreases, they're talking about the potential right now with the House bill as it is written. If we assume that the states can't do what they are mandating that they do, we're talking about decreasing the amount of meals people get who are on SNAP by 9.5 billion meals, Jeff, while food insecurity rates are going up. Now, Feeding America, remarkable network. No other network like it on the whole planet. We provide more food to people experiencing hunger than any other organization, I think, on the planet, but certainly in the United States. 6 billion meals in a year. Now, that's really impressive. But did you figure out the math just now? It wipes out 100% of all of the food that we distribute. And then some, 9.5 billion meals wiped out if the House bill gets enacted as it's currently written. And if the states are not able to make up the difference, that's what's going to happen. That math just doesn't work. It just doesn't. And those are real people who are going to be impacted by it.
Will taking federal dollars away from those states make the situation better?
Jeff, it's got to make it worse. It's got to make it worse. Look, I should have said it at the outset. SNAP is not perfect. The people who are administering SNAP and the people who are receiving SNAP are humans. They're not perfect on either side of that. But SNAP is actually, contrary to what a lot of people think, what is proven is SNAP is actually one of the most efficiently run programs there are. And even in that, there are challenges. So you've got state administration, different states ask for different things. Different states have a different process for applying. So there's not consistency, there's not predictability. There's work that needs to be done there. What the House has done in House Bill 1, it would actually put a $4 billion additional burden, additional burden on states of that 9.5 billion meals that I talked about before. And I like to talk in terms of meals so people really understand what the implications are for real people. Of that 9.5 billion meals, nearly 4 billion of them would be the burden now of the state to pick up. Now, the states that I've been privy to, they're not doing that well right now. They're not. There are flaws in the administration, to be sure. But they're actually just, they're in deficit positions. They're already making drastic cuts. And to now put on top of that an additional 4 billion meal burden per year, what's going to wind up happening is highly probable that they won't fill in the gap. So that's why we'll wind up with, if nothing else changes, 9.5 billion meal gap for people experiencing hunger.
Some people in your staff have suggested that the discrepancies that may be happening in the states are not necessarily that there is oversubscription, but actually undersubscription, that there are more people who are eligible than are able to receive.
We know that to be true. We know that there are people who are eligible to receive SNAP benefits. Number one, don't even know that they're eligible to receive. There are others who know that they're eligible to receive, but the system is too complicated for them to be able to do it. or they don't have the transportation that they would need in order to get to where they've got to do the application. Feeding America actually tries to stand in that gap alongside people experiencing hunger. We're the largest SNAP application organization in the United States outside of the government itself. So we work hard to help people in that, but we know that there are people who get lost in the cracks of it. So we know that to be true. Now, Jeff, another thing that I'd love to talk about is, I mentioned before, SNAP. SNAP is human involved in it. And surely there must be some frauds involved who are receiving SNAP. Surely there must be. But I have to tell you what we know to be a really, really significant challenge around fraud in SNAP is when people who are not supposed to get SNAP at all come in and use technology to put these false readers on the at the registers, and they basically are stealing those benefits from people who actually qualify for them. So Feeding America feels that we ought to take a very strong stance around fraud as it relates to any of these programs. I think we ought to take a very strong stance around prosecuting people who are stealing, siphoning benefits from people who deserve it. You know, I go around the country and I meet these families, these working families, who are sending their babies to bed without the food that they need. And there are other frauds who are out there siphoning and stealing the food. It's just reprehensible to me. And as a nation, we ought to all say that simply is unacceptable. And we ought to enforce going after those frauds and making sure that they have to account for what they're doing.
Of those individuals that come to shelters and come to feeding locations, how many of those are employed? And how big is the issue of the people are working and making money, but they don't have enough money to meet the basic needs of housing and transportation and still supply food?
Let's try to unpack each of the important things that you're asking me there. So let's start with the fact that there already are work requirements attached to SNAP. Let's continue with the fact that Feeding America as an organization, and I think most people want people who can work to find a way to work. We've seen the restorative power that has on a person when they know that they're making these significant contributions toward their own futures and toward the futures of their families. And we certainly are in favor of incentivizing positively people to be able to do that. And there's some things in our current system that disincentivize that. And we ought to be addressing those. And this is not the time that I'll get to talk a lot about benefits cliffs, but you're going to have to bring me back so we can unpack a lot of what I'm talking about there with those benefits cliffs. They really set you up to fail. We could do something about that, and we want to be a part of doing something about it. So there's that part. And then there's the fiction that's out there that the vast majority of people who are receiving SNAP benefits, that they don't want to work, they don't work, et cetera. If you remove children and the elderly, the vast majority of people who receive SNAP benefits have at least one job. These households are working class households, and people inside of these households are still struggling to make ends meet. Now, on another point that you made that I want to unpack as well, Jeff, do you know what's the largest percentage of increase in people who are going to food banks is right now?
No.
It's actually people who are working and who don't qualify for SNAP. So you've got people who, with SNAP, are still food insecure, and we're talking about reducing their number of meals by 9.5 billion annually. And then there are people who can't even qualify for SNAP and who are food insecure. Because according to the way the system's built right now, it assumes that they ought to be able to feed their families. But with rising costs and housing and all those other assaults that people have on their finances, they simply can't. So all those things, I'm glad you asked the question because it's a layered question. It requires layered answers. One of the big risks that we have with legislation all the time is that the legislation, even when it's well-intended, will have all kinds of unintended consequences. And part of the reason that it happens is because people move so fast through it, right? So they're quickly trying to get a bill passed, and they change this thing from an and to an R. And the difference of one letter can mean a world of difference in terms of what that legislation actually means. So we actually have a thoughtful process for dealing with SNAP. It's called the Farm Bill. The people who work on the Farm Bill, many of them, like Senator Bozeman out of Arkansas and others, I mean, they've been doing this for a long time. They're highly sophisticated. They understand the ins and the outs. They understand the implications. And the Farm Bill is a thoughtful exercise. It doesn't run through with all these unintended consequences. What Congress could do right now is take SNAP off the table. Instead of focusing on SNAP in this haphazard, quick way, we could use the apparatus that already exists that has been proven to work very well for a very long time. We could have SNAP legislation go through the Farm Bill. And if we were to do that, I am so confident that it would be a much better outcome for people experiencing hunger.
You're suggesting a Farm Bill moving through general order as opposed to moving through reconciliation.
That is precisely right. And that's why we have it set up the way that it's set up. It's just really well done. I like the fact, and I think all of us should, that that Farm Bill, sure, it does include SNAP, but it also has that's where we make sure that we're protecting our American farmers, growers, and producers as well. And it acknowledges that those two things are related. Those two things are related. It would be like, to me, Feeding America, it's unconscionable to me that Feeding America would not be an advocate for American farmers, growers, producers, and ranchers. Because there's no way we get to do anything that we do. We can't do any of it well without thriving agricultural communities. That's the only way that this works. It works together. So thriving farmers, American farmers, growers, producers, and ranchers, alongside good, thoughtful approaches to SNAP, that works together to help communities across the country to thrive. That is where our hope should be. And that's where we should invest our energy.
Claire, one of the more disturbing items that I find in the research suggests that 1 out of 5 children is food insecure. And also that a large percentage of those who are food insecure are not in the big cities, but actually in rural areas across the country. Can you touch on these two areas?
No, that's absolutely true. So, you hear people say all the time, our children are our future. They literally are our future. They are the foundation for whatever it is we're going to be next. It's based upon these kids. And without access to nutrition that's consistent, those children are not set up to thrive. As a consequence, our country is not set up to thrive. So when you invest in kids, you invest in the future of the whole country. That is really challenging when you look at, as you said, 1 in 5 kids are food insecure. The other thing that you mentioned that I want to make sure to emphasize alongside you, there are all of these narratives that simply aren't accurate. There are more counties in this country that have high rates of food insecurity that are not urban. There are way more that are rural than there are that are urban. That is a fact. And the depth of that food insecurity can be particularly stifling in rural America. There's so many food deserts in rural America. So when you talk about things like SNAP, as an example, what I don't know that people are really thinking about is these cuts are not discriminating. So these cuts are going to hit big cities, mid-sized cities, and small cities. But the other thing that these cuts do is when you cut programs like SNAP, when you change what you can get on SNAP, et cetera, you're also impacting rural grocery stores. Sometimes those grocery stores are the only lifeline, the only access to groceries that people living in rural America have. Without those grocery stores, they are food deserts. As a result of this legislation, if it stays the way it is, we are going to be shuttering rural grocery stores, guaranteed.
Claire, if we look at the 47.4 million hungry in the country today, in order for Feeding America to satisfy all the food insecure, how many more dollars do you need to be able to satisfy food insecurity?
In a stable environment where we keep the number over 47 million that it's at right now, it would require our analysis says it would require an additional $32 billion.
And if the legislation comes through, then you would effectively need to increase productivity by 150%.
That's exactly right. Just to keep our head above water. This is a challenging time. I'm so excited that you've given me this opportunity to talk to your audience. I've met many people who are in that audience, Jeff, and I believe in them. So with good information, I think we together can be a force for good for people experiencing hunger. We've got a chance to talk to members of Congress to make sure they understand what's really happening on the ground, to ask them to slow down, to put this type of important legislation in the hands of the Farm Bill, to take the time to understand the implications, to not have all of these terrible, terrible, unforeseen consequences, collateral damage, if you will. These are real people, real challenges. We want to set them all up to thrive.
Well, Claire, we want to thank you very much for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. And we appreciate your work and the work of all of the Feeding America Network across the country. It is Open Mic, and today you've got the last word.
Well, thank you. I keep on thinking about how grateful it is that I am and that I think this whole nation should be when you think about the remarkable, remarkable industry, innovation, dedication that emerges from rural America and from American farmers, growers, and producers and ranchers. They deserve our respect. They deserve our admiration, and they deserve our support. People experiencing hunger also deserve all of those things. When we work together as a society, we accomplish such remarkable things, things that no other place on the planet accomplishes, what we accomplish in this country when we work together. This is a time for working together, for having a common goal, for what the future can and should be for people all across the country, holding hands together and making it happen. So thank you for giving me the chance to talk to this remarkable audience. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to serve in the role that I get to serve in today as the CEO of Feeding America. And I'm hopeful and optimistic that we're going to make some good, positive changes to this legislation. And on the other end of it, we'll be able to pat ourselves on the back and say, job well done.
Our thanks to Claire Babineau-Fontenot, CEO of Feeding America, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the American Sugar Alliance. America's sweetest industry creates jobs and provides a sustainably produced food ingredient. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Daly.